Chapter 67. News of the miraculous rescue of Lydia was circulated quickly among those scattered Christians who had escaped destruction. Confessors came to look at her, to whom Christ's favor had been shown clearly. First came Nazarius and Miriam, with whom Peter the Apostle was hiding thus far. After them came others. All, as well as Vinicius, Lydia, and the Christian slaves of Petronius, listened with attention to the narrative of Ursus about the voice which he had heard in his soul, and which commanded him to struggle with the wild bull. All went away consoled, hoping that Christ would not let his followers be exterminated on earth before his coming at the day of judgment. And hope sustained their hearts, for persecution had not ceased yet. Whoever was declared a Christian by public report was thrown into prison at once by the city watches. It is true that the victims were fewer, for the majority of confessors had been seized and tortured to death. The Christians who remained had either left Rome to wait out the storm in distant provinces, or had hidden most carefully, not daring to assemble in common prayer unless in sand pits outside the city. They were persecuted yet, however, and though the games were at an end, the newly arrested were reserved for future games or punished specially. Though it was believed in Rome no longer that Christians had caused the conflagration, they were declared enemies of humanity and the state, and the edict against them remained in former force. The Apostle Peter did not venture for a long time to appear in the house of Petronius, but at last on a certain evening Nazarius announced his arrival. Lydia, who was able to walk alone now, and Vinicius ran out to meet him, and fell to embracing his feet. He greeted them with emotion all the greater, that not many sheep in that flock over which Christ had given him authority, and over the fate of which his great heart was weeping, remained to him. So when Vinicius said, "Lord, because of thee the Redeemer returned her to me," he answered, "He returned her, because of thy faith, and so that not all the lips which profess his name should grow silent." And evidently he was thinking then of those thousands of his children torn by wild beasts, of those crosses with which the arena had been filled, and those fiery pillars in the gardens of the beast. For he spoke with great sadness. Vinicius and Lydia noticed also that his hair had grown entirely white, that his whole form was bent, and that in his face there was as much sadness and suffering as if he had passed through all those pains and torments which the victims of Nero's rage and madness had endured. But both understood that since Christ had given himself to torture and to death, no one was permitted to avoid it. Still their hearts were cut at sight of the apostle, bent by years, toil, and pain. So Vinicius, who intended to take Lydia soon to Naples, where they would meet Pomponia, and go to Sicily, implored him to leave Rome in their company. But the apostle placed his hand on the tribune's head and answered, "In my soul I hear these words of the Lord, which he spoke to me on the lake of Tiberias. When thou wert young, thou didst gird thyself, and walk whither thou wouldst. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee, and carry thee whither thou wouldst not." Therefore it is proper that I follow my flock. And when they were silent, not knowing the sense of his speech, he added, "My toil is nearing its end. I shall find entertainment and rest only in the house of the Lord." Then he turned to them saying, "Remember me, for I have loved you as a father loves his children, and whatever ye do in life, do it for the glory of God." Thus speaking, he raised his aged, trembling hands and blessed them. They nestled up to him, feeling that to be the last blessing, perhaps, which they should receive from him. It was destined them, however, to see him once more. A few days later Petronius brought terrible news from the Palatine. It had been discovered there that one of Caesar's freedmen was a Christian, and on this man were found letters of the apostles Peter and Paul, with letters of James, John, and Judas. Peter's presence in Rome was known formerly to Tigellinus, but he thought that the apostle had perished with thousands of other confessors. Now it transpired that the two leaders of the new faith were alive and in the capital. It was determined, therefore, to seize them at all costs, for it was hoped that with their death the last root of the hated sect would be plucked out. Petronius heard from Vestinius that Caesar himself had issued an order to put Peter and Paul in the Mamertine prison within 3 days, and that whole detachments of Praetorians had been sent to search every house in the Trans-Tiber. When he heard this, Vinicius resolved to warn the apostle. In the evening he and Ursus put on Gallic mantles, and went to the house of Miriam, where Peter was living. The house was at the very edge of the Trans-Tiber division of the city, at the foot of the Janiculum. On the road they saw houses surrounded by soldiers, who were guided by certain unknown persons. This division of the city was alarmed, and in places crowds of curious people had assembled. Here and there centurions interrogated prisoners touching Simon Peter and Paul of Tarsus. Ursus and Vinicius were in advance of the soldiers, and went safely to Miriam's house, in which they found Peter surrounded by a handful of the faithful. Timothy, Paul's assistant, and Linus were at the side of the apostle. At news of the approaching danger, Nazarius led all by a hidden passage to the garden gate, and then to deserted stone quarries, a few hundred yards distant from the Janiculum gate. Ursus had to carry Linus, whose bones, broken by torture, had not grown together yet. But once in the quarry, they felt safe. And by the light of a torch ignited by Nazarius they began to consult, in a low voice, how to save the life of the apostle who was so dear to them. Lord, said Vinicius, let Nazarius guide thee at daybreak to the Alban Hills. There I will find thee, and we will take thee to Antium, where a ship is ready to take us to Naples and Sicily. Blessed will the day and the hour be in which thou shalt enter my house, and thou wilt bless my hearth. The others heard this with delight, and pressed the apostle, saying, Hide thyself, sacred leader, remain not in Rome. Preserve the living truth, so that it perish, not with us and thee. Hear us, who entreat thee as a father. Do this in Christ's name, cried others, grasping at his robes. My children, answered Peter, who knows the time when the Lord will mark the end of his life? But he did not say that he would not leave Rome, and he hesitated what to do, for uncertainty, and even fear, had been creeping into his soul for some time. His flock was scattered. The work was wrecked. That church, which before the burning of the city, had been flourishing like a splendid tree, was turned into dust by the power of the East. Nothing remained save tears, nothing save memories of torture and death. The sowing had yielded rich fruit, but Satan had trampled it into the earth. Legions of angels had not come to aid the perishing, and Nero was extending in glory over the earth, terrible, mightier than ever, the Lord of all seas and all lands. More than once had that fisherman of the Lord stretched his hands heavenward in loneliness and asked, Lord, what must I do? How must I act? And how am I, a feeble old man, to fight with this invincible power of evil, which thou art permitted to rule, and have victory? And he called out thus in the depth of his immense pain, repeating in spirit, those sheep which thou didst command me to feed are no more, thy church is no more, loneliness and mourning are in thy capital, what dost thou command me to do now? Am I to stay here, or lead forth the remnant of the flock, to glorify thy name in secret somewhere beyond the sea? And he hesitated. He believed that the living truth would not perish, that it must conquer, but at moments he thought that the hour had not come yet, that it would come only when the Lord should descend to the earth in the day of judgment in glory and power 100 times greater than the might of Nero. Frequently it seemed to him that, if he left Rome, the faithful would follow, that he would lead them then far away to the shady groves of Galilee, to the quiet surface of the lake of Tiberias, to shepherds as peaceful as doves, or as sheep, who feed there among thyme and pepperwort. And an increasing desire for peace and rest, an increasing yearning for the lake and Galilee, seized the heart of the fisherman. Tears came more frequently to the old man's eyes. But at the moment, when he made the choice, sudden alarm and fear came on him. How was he to leave that city, in which so much martyr's blood had sunk into the earth, and where so many lips had given the true testimony of the dying? Was he alone to yield? And what would he answer the Lord on hearing the words, "These have died for the faith, but thou didst flee"? Nights and days passed for him in anxiety and suffering. Others, who had been torn by lions, who had been fastened to crosses, who had been burned in the gardens of Caesar, had fallen asleep in the Lord after moments of torture, but he could not sleep, and he felt greater tortures than any of those invented by executioner Zephyr victims. Often was the dawn whitening the roofs of houses, while he was still crying from the depth of his mourning heart, "Lord, why didst thou command me to come hither, and found thy capital in the den of the beast?" For 33 years after the death of his master he knew no rest. Staff in hand, he had gone through the world, and declared the good tidings. His strength had been exhausted in journeys and toil, till at last, when in that city, which was the head of the world, he had established the work of his master, one bloody breath of wrath had burned it, and he saw that there was need to take up the struggle anew. And what a struggle! On one side Caesar, the Senate, the people, the legions holding the world with a circle of iron, countless cities, countless lands, power such as the eye of man had not seen. On the other side he, so bent with age and toil, that his trembling age, and was hardly able to carry his staff. At times, therefore, he said to himself, that it was not for him to measure with the Caesar of Rome, that Christ alone could do that. All these thoughts were passing through his care-filled head, when he heard the prayers of the last handful of the faithful. They, surrounding him in an ever-narrowing circle, repeated with voices of entreaty, "Hide thyself, Rabbi, and lead us away from the power of the beast." Apostrophe, finally Linus also bowed his tortured head before him. "O Lord," said he, "the Redeemer commanded thee to feed his sheep, but they are here no longer. Go, tomorrow they will not be here. Go, therefore, where thou mayst find them yet. The word of God is living still in Jerusalem, in Antioch, in Ephesus, and in other cities. What wilt thou do by remaining in Rome? If thou fall, thou wilt merely swell the triumph of the beast." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the Lord has not designated the limit of John's life. Paul is a Roman citizen, they cannot condemn him without trial. But if the power of hell rise up against thee, O teacher, those whose hearts are dejected will ask, "Who is above Nero?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, thou art the rock on which the church of God is founded. Let us die, but permit not the victory of Antichrist over the vicegerent of God, and return not hither till the Lord has crushed him who shed innocent blood. Look at our tears, repeated all who were present. Tears flowed over Peter's face too. After a while he rose, and, stretching his hands over the kneeling figures, said, "May the name of the Lord be magnified, and may his will be done." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.